If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store. On 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. My name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson is the audio archivist who supplies so much of not just the audio, but also the incredible personality and charm that he brings to each and every show, and his information as well. Landon Coons puts it all together for us, and we call it Beyond the Bricks. We thank all of you for listening tonight. Mike, I will begin with this. As we once again celebrate kind of an anniversary race, if you will, like we did a night ago, I'm going to ask if you, by any chance, Mike Thompson, are an enthusiast of breakfast cereal in any way, shape, or form.
I used to really like breakfast cereal, but unfortunately when I got diagnosed with celiac, there's only certain things I can eat now. But yes, I do like breakfast cereal, and I would like to eat it more if I could.
Well, here is one of them that we're going to have tonight. We are going to go back and we are going to enjoy some Golden Grahams, because we're taking a look back at the 1966 Indianapolis 500, which was 60 years ago this year. And of course, it was also the 50th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. But before we get the race underway, it's of course a tradition, especially in that era, that we have to hear from the Singing Hoosiers.
The 500, the 500, the greatest race in the world, from the opening bar till the race is done, it's thrill after thrill after thrill. The 500, the 500,
quarter hour of the 500-mile race broadcast from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is brought to you by Goodyear. This year, as in every year, for 51 consecutive years, more people ride on Goodyear tires than on any other kind. And by Autolite, makers of quality ignition parts for road and track. This sports feature is a presentation of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Network, and any reproduction of this broadcast without the written permission of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is strictly forbidden.
It's race day, May 30th, 1966. The place, the world's greatest race course, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The sun is brilliant, the air is clear and warm, the sky is blue, and the moment is golden. Good morning around the world from the Golden Anniversary 500, the 50th running of this automobile classic, bursting with tradition and color, which has no equal anywhere. The competition displayed here by strong men and superb machines promises fame and glory for the winner, disappointment for many, even heartbreak for some. But these professional race drivers have chosen a way of life unknown to the average man, not even too well understood, but unique and challenging. A hazardous sport, yes, but a skilled one, a fierce one. And from the look of the lineup today and the average speed of the starting field at more than 160 miles per hour, the fastest one in history. Within 25 minutes, the call for the gentlemen who race to start their engines will be upon us. This is Sid Collins, speaking to you for the 19th consecutive year from the 500. We're here in the Master Control Tower, high above the starting line, ready and anxious to again paint the word picture for you.
It is my obligation anytime we hear the Singing Hoosiers to, of course, thank Joe Jordan for not just writing that song, The Indianapolis Pharmacist, but because my dad was an employee, as I've told many times before, by my dad, his first ever suit for the release of that song once it was selected from Joe Jordan. So always special for me to hear that song, and I know how special it is still to this day to my dad. As for the 1966 Indianapolis 500, as it was getting set to get underway, it was a golden era of talent to come through the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indianapolis 500. Many would tell you that a year later would be the most diverse and talent-rich field in the history of the event. But 1966 was pretty stout as well. Here is Sid Collins with the starting lineup.
And now for those of you keeping charts, and for all of you who must know the participants in this battle, the starting lineup, listed by car number, driver name, hometown, and car name. Our fast first row on the pole, car number one, Mario Andretti from Nazareth, Pennsylvania. A Ford engine, the Dean Van Lines Hawk, and his qualifying speed a record of 165.899 miles per hour. Next to Mario is car number 19, Jim Clark, Dunes, Scotland, a Ford, STP gas treatment special. And number 82, George Snyder, Fresno, California, a Ford, the Sheraton Thompson special. The second row, 98, Parnelly Jones, a former winner, Torrance, California, a supercharged Offenhauser engine, Agajanian's Rev 500 special. Number 14, Lloyd Ruby, Wichita Falls, Texas, a Ford, the Bardall Eagle. And number 72, Gordon Johncock, Hastings, Michigan, a Ford, the Weinberger Home Special. The third row, number 3, Jim McElreath, Arlington, Texas, a Ford, Zinc Urshel Slick Track Burner Special. Number 12, Chuck Hulse, Downey, California, a Ford, Wins Special. And number 4, Don Branson from Champaign, Illinois, a Ford, the Leader Card Racer. The fourth row, number 88, Jerry Grant, Santa Ana, California, a Ford, the Bardall Pace Setter Home Special. 43, a rookie, Jackie Stewart, Dumbarton, Scotland, a Ford, Bose Seal Fast Special. Number 27, Billy Foster, Victoria, British Columbia in Canada, a Ford, the Jim Robbins Special. The fifth row, number 26, former winner, two-time winner here, Roger Ward, Indianapolis, Indiana, a supercharged Offie, the Bryant Heating and Cooling Special. Number 28, Johnny Boyd, Fresno, California, Ford, Prestone Special. And number 24, another world champion, but a rookie here, Graham Hill from London, England, a Ford, the American Red Ball Special. The sixth row, number 53, a rookie, Gary Congdon, Garden Grove, California, Offenhauser, the Valvoline Special. 94, a rookie, Mel Kenyon, Davenport, Iowa, Offenhauser, the Gerhardt Offie. Number 2, A.J. Foyt Jr., Houston, Texas, a Ford engine, the Sheraton Thompson Special. The seventh row, number 31, Dan Gurney, Costa Mesa, California, Ford, All-American Racers Eagle. Number 6, Joey Leonard, San Jose, California, a Ford, the Yamaha Eagle. Number 8, Roger McCluskey, Tucson, Arizona, a Ford, the G.C. Murphy Special. In the 8th row, number 56, Jim Herdebees, North Tonawanda, New York, turbocharged Offenhauser, the Gerhardt Offie. Number 18, Al Unser, Albuquerque, New Mexico, a Ford, the STP Oil Treatment Special. And number 66, a rookie, Cale Yarborough, Charlotte, North Carolina, the Jim Robbins Special. The ninth row, number 77, a rookie, Carl Williams, Kansas City, Missouri, a Ford, the Dayton Steel Wheel Special. Number 37, Arnie Knepper, Belleville, Illinois, a Ford, the Sam Liozzi Special. Number 22, Bud Tingelstad, Hawthorne, California, a supercharged Offie, the Federal Engineering Special. Those are the first nine rows. We'll have the 10th and 11th for you in just a moment. back to our lineup. The 10th row, number 11, Bobby Unser, Albuquerque, New Mexico. A turbocharged offie. The Racing Associates Correction. The Vita Fresh Orange Juice Special. Number 54, Eddie Johnson, Richmond Heights, Ohio. An Offenhauser. The Valvoline Special, number 2. And number 75, Al Miller of Roseville, Michigan. In a Ford, the Jerry Alderman Ford Lotus. In the back row, the 11th row, number 39, Bobby Grimm, Indianapolis, Indiana. This is a front-engine, turbocharged Offenhauser, and it's a roadster, the only one in the field. And that is the Racing Associates Special. Number 34, a rookie, Larry Dixon, Marietta, Ohio, a Ford, the Michener Petroleum Special. And 96, Ronnie Duman, Dearborn, Michigan, a Ford, the Harrison Special. 17 of these cars riding on Firestone tires, 16 on Goodyear tires in that competition.
Mike, unfortunately, there was one driver of the era that was very accomplished that was not in the 1966 race, but that's not to say that Sid Collins, Mike, if I'm correct, did not stop to pay tribute.
Yeah, that's right. Unfortunately, earlier in the month, Chuck Rohde had been fatally injured in an accident, and Sid did take the time to, you know, remember Chuck Rohde on race day, which I always thought that was a good touch. He did that a couple times during the years that Sid was the chief announcer. So I thought that was a really nice touch from Sid. And then following that, he actually kind of gets lost a little bit in the pageantry of all the bands and the big parade of bands and the world's giant drum from Purdue University.
There are 7 rookies. Last year we had 11. 5 of them finished in the first 10 spots. Rookies, in addition to Stewart and Hill, are Gary Congdon, Mel Kenyon, Cale Yarborough, Carl Williams, and Larry Dixon. During time trials, the racing fraternity lost driver Chuck Rohde of Indianapolis. Chuck had started racing in 1948 at Little Rock, Arkansas, and held midget titles, finishing both second and third in the national standings. We all miss Chuck Rohde today. Now we invite you to stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing. We've just had the Purdue marching band on the track, rendering our national anthem. Early this morning, a parade of 50 bands played on the main stretch, led by Purdue's band and the world's largest drum. And John DeCamp from Purdue, that is still the world's largest drum, isn't it, John?
Certainly is, Sid.
I thought you'd say that. But it is. A fine school up there. We have wonderful colleges here in Indiana. I'll not try to list them right now, but they've chosen this fine Purdue aggregation for a number of years to play here.
And as you heard in the starting roster, of course, you have two of the all-time greats starting 1 and 2 in Mario Andretti and Jim Clark. And it didn't take long for the action to get underway in the 1966 Indy 500.
Pat Dunn waves the flag, and the Golden Anniversary 500-mile race is on! The number one turn at Mike Ahern.
And here they come to the number one turn, accelerating out of the back and taking the lead. Well, let's see the right.
We have an accident on the main stretch, Mike. Hold it. We have a terrible accident on the main stretch.
A very bad accident on the main stretch before they reach the turn. Lou Palmer is closest to them. We can't count how many cars
are out of the
involved.
Race. Number 39, also out. Number 96, parked against the wall. All drivers seem to be getting out of the equipment that's parked immediately in front of us here. And we note that Bobby Grimm, all right, here comes out of the All-American Racers Special, another of the competitors. Further down the track, beyond our view, entering the number one turn, Mike Ahern will be checking for you. We've got fire foam going on one of the pieces of equipment that is just at the beginning of the turn, and I won't attempt to identify that one for you at this time. We will make a check immediately and return to you, Sid, as soon as we can.
Lou, we'll have to rely on you. Len and I have our glasses up here. We'll try to check, but of course, as always, striving for accuracy will not give you any information until it's officially released.
That first lap melee would take out nearly a third of the field. Among those that was taken out in that crash was Don Branson.
Chuck, thank you. And Don Branson's with Luke Walton in the center pit. Luke?
Yes, here's Don Branson of Urbana, Illinois, Sid. And Don, would you tell us how you figured you're part of this accident down here?
Well, I was a victim of circumstances, really. I didn't have no place to go because I can't shut the... It happened right ahead of me. Billy Foster got into Gordon Johncock and all... wheels and everything else started flying off the cars, and one was trying to get in the cockpit with me, and I was trying to dodge it, and finally somebody tagged me and then spun me out, and I got in the wall and knocked a couple wheels off my car, so we're out of business.
You're out of the race now.
Right.
The people over in Urbana will want to know how you are.
Oh, I'm fine.
Thank you very much, Don. Don Branson of Urbana, Illinois, now back to Sid in the tower.
Mike, there was a delay of an hour and 24 minutes, and you know what that meant, Mike? That meant that it was time for Sid to entertain during the downtime up in the broadcast booth and give out some of your favorite awards, right?
That's correct. Now, the other night we played the interview where Sid gives Cesar Romero one of his famous gold-filled Zippo lighters, and we have another one of those. Now, we've never played this clip on the show before. We have Sid giving Phil Harris, Indiana native Phil Harris, who the next year would have huge, monstrous success in the Jungle Book as Baloo the Bear. We have Sid Collins giving Baloo the Bear a gold-filled Zippo lighter here.
Back in the control tower once again, another one of our visiting celebrities is a well-known golfer, TV, radio, musician, and everything else, and a friend of ours here in Indiana, because he's from Linton, Indiana, initially, Mr. Phil Harris. Phil's been here for the race before, but not one like this, have you, Phil?
Yes, I was.
Were you here in 64?
I was here 2 years ago, and of course, I think 2 years ago was much worse than this, and we're so happy hear that everybody, in fact, I was up on the top tier, and I was quite sure that everybody walked out of their cars under their own power. I was sure glad to hear there's nobody hurt.
Well, we were too, Phil, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of the day more than we all have so far.
Well, it's been a beautiful day, and the weather's great for it, and I just hope on this start, I can understand it. Of course, everybody says the same thing, but I can understand a guy looking forward to a big race. I mean, these guys in the racket and then getting knocked out in 2 or 3 seconds, must be pretty rough on them.
Well, it certainly is. I said in the opening comments, it's a disappointment for some and heartbreak for some, and I think this has been a combination today, don't you?
It has. Of course, then a guy can look around and say, well, that could have been a lot worse, because when you saw that debris flying through the air up there, it looked to me like it was going to be even worse than 64.
Well, we're counting our blessings. Phil, we give you this gold-filled Zippo lighter for being a guest on the network today, and thank you.
Well, thank you, Sid, and it's nice for you to give me an opportunity to say hello to all of my friends, and I'm glad to be here with Mr. and Mrs. Tony Hellman.
Thank you very much, Phil. Good to see you. Phil Harris, who gives us much enjoyment when he comes back to Indiana each year to be a guest at the 500.
By the way, Mike Thompson has been gallivanting all across this country to find exactly that gold Zippo lighter that he can get at one of the memorabilia shows. And it is possible there might be some at the memorabilia show coming up that we'll tell you about later in the month. But Mike, when we come back after the delay in the interviews with Baloo the Bear, I say we get back to the race, including letting listeners hear some of the highlights of the star-filled 66 Indy 500. Sound good to you?
That sounds good to me, because there's a lot of interesting clips coming up.
And so we will play all of those when we come back to Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
And we are recapturing the 1966 Indianapolis 500-mile race, the 50th running of the greatest race in the world, from inside the Hensley Lugo Group Race Command Center. It happens higher Hensley. Jake Query along with Mike Thompson and Landon Coons. We set for you the way things were turning out here in the 66 race. You heard the starting lineup. You heard the singing Hoosiers. You heard the crash that would wipe out one-third of the field before the race really got underway. But Jim Clark, as you heard us mention, was starting second in this race. And it didn't take long for things to get loose for him. Lap 48, As a matter of fact, Jim Clark would have a spin, much to the surprise of Jim Shelton.
Clark coming in the pits and out of the number four turn. Here's Jim Shelton.
We have just seen some of the greatest driving in our history with this speedway. Jimmy Clark lost it up here completely, turned around two or three times, got into the grass on the infield, finally righted himself, and continued on down your way, Sid. It was utterly fantastic. We do want to make a comment. It looks as though more oil on this turn up here than we have ever seen before, so we could have some more of this. Now, back to the tower and you.
And the South Pit and Lou Palmer.
That's the sound of Jimmy Clark roaring back out on the track.
Mike, in keeping with a breakfast cereal theme, I guess when it comes to the 1966 Indy 500 for Jim Clark, he was searching for something of the loop variation, correct?
Yeah, he was. It was a little bit of a squirrely day early on for Jim Clark. You know, Jim Clark's my racing hero. It was one of his greatest drives, actually, because he not only spun once early in the race and kept it off the wall, he did it again a few laps later.
Now to the number three turn, here's Ron Carroll. Ron, come in.
All right, Sid, and Jimmy Clark has hit the wall at number three, spun around about twice, is now in the grass and heading down the fourth turn. I'm going to throw it over to Jim Shelton. Jim, can you pick him up?
Take it,
yes,
Jim.
Yes, we can, and again, a fantastic driving job. He clipped it, I believe, this time, straightened it out again, and he's now down in front of Sid Collins, I believe.
Well, by golly, this fella keeps on going, doesn't he? The way you describe it, he should have been out of the race three times. But he just rolled by, looking comfortable. How's he looking, the number one, Mike?
Looks very good. Very good here, Sid. He just glided by in the number two corner right now. Back to you.
Howdy, can you see him?
Yes, here comes Jim Clark right now. Number 19, he looks fine because he spreads out to the outside wall and up the backstretch. Back to you, Sid.
Doug, coming by you?
Yes, here he comes right now, Sid. And we can see no visual damage on that automobile. He's right up close to the fence and looks like he's running flat out as he heads up toward turn number three. Sid?
Let's take him around three and four, Ron and Jim.
All right, Sid, and here he comes. I'm looking to see if I see any damage, and I do not see any, but I thought he hit that wall. I see a little bit of red paint over there. Over to four. Jim Shelton.
Well, if he didn't hit it, Ron, he came so close that you couldn't put an eyelash in between. But he just came by here. He is running just as smooth can be, and he's a fantastic driver. Now, back to you, Sid.
Jim, let's get this straight. Did he actually spin around and correct it? Did he spin? Jim?
Say again, Sid.
Did he spin? Did Clark spin?
Yes, it did.
All right, thank you. Now he's coming in the pits. Lou, pick him up down there. Lou Palmer.
Very good, Sid. We're watching now, and they are, I think, going to put rubber on, though the man with a hammer hesitates now. He's talking to Jimmy. They gave him a little more fuel. They're going to check the tire before actually changing it, checking it for possible flat spots. Everything's working well, it appears. No rubber changes yet. They're going over it very, very carefully. Among those out there, Vince Granatelli taking a look at it. No change. Here comes Clark, back to compete. There he goes, Sid. Jimmy Clark back out on the track. Sid?
Okay, he's back out on the track once again, and this fellow's like a prize fighter today who's been knocked down and keeps getting back up.
Mike mentioned that Jim Clark was his racing hero and that perhaps that might have been one of his best drives. A hero to all of us is Speedway historian emeritus Donald Davidson, who shares more on the Scottish superstar's remarkable driving skill.
Jim Clark spun twice and drew rage from the fans because everybody is kind of on edge because there had been some very serious accidents in recent years. And when Clark went into a spin, one would think, oh my goodness, he's going to hit the wall and there's going to be catastrophe. And he twice spun and was able to save it and come out of it and keep going. And the crowd just went berserk.
Mike, I think when we talk about drivers of the 60s and into the 70s, you know, there are a number of them, and we certainly have seen this in more recent times. Those drivers that just seemingly, if it weren't for bad luck at IMS, they'd have no luck at all. And one of those that I think an entire generation identified with because he continuously knocked on the door and just seemingly never had the right break was that of Lloyd Ruby.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Lloyd Ruby'd have to be in the short list of four or five of the greatest drivers and, you know, greatest talents who didn't win at the Indianapolis 500. People who had chances to win. I mean, I'm not talking about like a Juan Manuel Fangio who, you know, didn't really have any kind of a legitimate shot or an Ascari. I'm talking about a guy like Ruby who had multiple legitimate chances to win and just never got the Borg Warner Trophy at all.
As a matter of fact, in that particular race of 1966, Lloyd Ruby led three different times for 68 laps. That would be the most of anybody over the course of the race. Two more than Jim Clark would lead. But in the end, his bad luck struck again.
And we see smoke coming from the rear of the car driven by Lloyd Ruby. One time around earlier, just entering the second turn, down from us here, a thin line of blue smoke from the rear of the car, and then a heavier line around this number one turn on this trip around. So, Sid, maybe we can follow him around and see what the trouble is. Back to you in the tower.
Well, we have Pat Vidan with a black flag out there, and that may be it. Len, did you see a number on the board as yet, or are they just waiting?
Yes, I saw number 14, but they're not showing it yet, so I'm quite sure that the officials will want to make sure anytime that you pull in that leader, you want to be pretty sure that he is leaking oil.
Car 19 with Clark pitted on lap 145 for 22 seconds for fuel. And car 11, Bobby Unser, pitted on lap 147 for fuel for 55 and 8-10 seconds. There's the black flag now for number 14, and they're calling Lloyd Ruby in, and he's in the lead, and they're bringing him in. Black flag for Lloyd Ruby. Jerry Grant back in the pits once again. A long day for him. Goodyear blimp is lofting itself, slowly moving around overhead. It's a pretty sight, isn't it? The speed down here, it looks like it's hardly moving at all up there. Ruby will come in. That will give us a new leader, and Jackie Stewart's running in second right now. That will put him in the position of going into the lead momentarily. We're on the 149th lap. Bill Fliedemeyer and Bill Lamb over there will check me. 149th lap, is that correct, John? Be very careful about that. That's what I have nightmares about during the year, is getting the wrong lap for the winner of this race one of these days. But when they spread out like this and begin to lap one another and come in for various pit stops, we get ourselves very interested in keeping as accurate as we possibly can. A lot of veterans didn't start the race this year. We didn't have Bill Cheeseburg in the field, or Bob Veith, or Bob Christie, Ebb Rose, Dempsey Wilson, Bobby Johns, Art Malone, Paul Goldsmith, Judd Larson, Earlin Sutton. And now Ruby coming in for his stop. And can you pick it up down there, Lou Palmer?
It's a considerable distance from us, but we can get an indication perhaps of the USAC official and what he has to say through the hand signals that they use. We just had a thumbs down a short time ago for Roger McCluskey. They're looking it over now, and really there is nothing Ruby apparently needs in the way of service from the crew, but they are having a consultation, and it's getting rather intensive. A few hands being waved in the air, as I say, at some distance. No way to overhear the conversation that's going on now, but Ruby is still very much in that pit and not out on the track, and this isn't going to protect the lead by any means. So Lloyd Ruby still there, still in the pit area. The crew looking it over, but no decision yet whether or not to let him go. So I think we'll turn loose at this time, and you'll see whether or not he can be pushed away and back into contention or not. They're still checking it, Sid.
Keep a close eye on it, Lou, if you will, and thanks for looking over that crowd. From up here, we can only see the people around the car and can't see the car, and I guess you can from the other side because there are 300,000 people here, and it gives the appearance of half of them around a race car when they come in the pits from up here, although I will say that the area is pretty well, very well policed today. Now back to Lou Palmer in the South Pit.
And this is the information. Lloyd Ruby reluctantly is unbuckled, is out of the car, standing alongside. He hasn't taken, now he's taking the helmet off. That would seem to be that. Lloyd Ruby retiring after leading this race more than in contention. He looked like he was on his way, but now the blue helmet being set aside and the car will be wheeled back to the garage area. Sid?
Donald Davidson on Lloyd Ruby's ride in 1966.
I think the big things about 1966 was probably Lloyd Ruby's best race. He would still end up leading the race five out of 6 years, and other people may point to other years, but I think 66 is where he seemed to have the field covered. And at one point before the halfway mark, he was running second to Jim Clark and passed him on the straightaway. So it wasn't Clark having a problem or pit stop shuffles. I mean, he flat took the lead on the straightaway and pretty much dominated from that point on. And then he started to have problems with an oil leak, and he was black flagged leading the race. I think he was leading at the time he got black flagged. And they tried to get the thing fixed, send it back out, and it hadn't been corrected. So he got black flagged again, and so he was out of the race. But I think he was the class of the day and led the most laps of the race, 68.
Eventually, the lead would cycle itself to Formula One star and a rookie, Jackie Stewart, who looked to have the race sewed up and looked like he was going to be the one to take the checkered flag in 1966. But then, with just 10 laps remaining, trouble took him out as well.
Lloyd Ruby out of the race, and Jackie Stewart now in the lead in car number 43, the Bose Seal Fast Special from Dumbarton Oaks, Scotland, driving a lowly Ford, started 11th. Dave Schneider is his chief mechanic and is entered by John Meekham Jr. in the same stable with Roger Ward and Graham Hill. Stewart now leading in car number 43. And Ruby was black flagged to come in at the end of the 152nd lap. Car number 6, Joey Leonard pitted on lap 135 for fuel and right front tire for 31 seconds. 94, Mel Kenyon pitted on lap... Well, we've lost Jackie Stewart. Everyone's standing here and they can't find Stewart. And there's no yellow flag out. I wonder if the car stopped anywhere. Can anybody around the track see it? He's not in the pits and it should have been around by now.
Number 3.
Yes, Ron, come in.
Yes, Sid. Jackie Stewart apparently is out. He's going, the engine is cut clear off. He came by number 3. It is in over in number 4 right now, coming to a stop and perhaps will be down on the grass. The engine was cut off, and I believe he's just coasting to a stop. Back to you, Sid.
Oh, what bad luck there for that gentleman, Jackie Stewart, and for Meekham and Bose. As I said, this is one of the more unusual races we've ever seen. Now, Graham Hill from London takes over the lead, so they can still hold on to the tee back in the garage area in either case. Lynn?
I think Graham Hill and Jimmy Clark are running much closer together for now first and second place. We can still see a very close finish.
Well, that's quite a surprise because Jackie hadn't signified any trouble at all until John noticed that he was pointing toward the rear of his machine a few laps ago. We still didn't see anything, no smoke, no tire problem, but the car was obviously malfunctioning. He must have failed to notice something, and Jackie has now, the car has died on the number 4 turn. Is he up by you, Jim? Jim Shelton?
Yes, he is, Sid.
What's he doing up there?
He just coasted by here very slowly. He is now standing in the cockpit. The car is still moving. He's out pushing it himself now. And I doubt if he will make it to the pit entrance. But anyway, he's giving it the old try with a push there. And now back to you, Sid.
Probably an occasional kick, too, I imagine, at this point. Well, Jackie Stewart would have been a great winner here for the 500-mile race, and I'm sure so will Graham Hill if he makes it. And, of course, we know the record of Jimmy Clark, who came in to win last year and has put on a splendid performance ever since his first year here. But we'll have to start taking a very close look now at Graham Hill.
Donald Davidson on Stewart's late exit from the 500.
One of the great moments of 66 was Jackie Stewart dropping out late in the race, not because of that, but the way that he handled it. And he had led like 40 laps and was appeared to be on his way to a victory as a rookie. First-time starter at Indianapolis, and he stopped up at the north end with 10 laps to go and then got out and started to push the car. Now, in Europe, that's in the Grand Prix races, that's what you would do if you could push your car over the line and be classed as a finisher. And after he'd struggled for a little distance, and I think the official said, you know, you don't need to do that. Over here, you get credit for the laps completed. And so then he walked in, but he did with such a flair with the bouncy walk that he had. He and Jim Clark had very similar bouncy walks. And the way that he played to the audience and waved, I mean, he just it was like they had the audience in the palm of his hand. And he said, boy, this fellow is a real showman, a real crowd pleaser.
Mike, you mentioned off the top the depth of talent in the 1966 Indy 500. Jackie Stewart speaks to that, a rookie with Formula One background. But it would turn out that things would then shift to another that shared both of those accolades.
Yeah, that's correct. And we've got an interesting finish coming up in the 1966 Indianapolis 500.
We'll play it for everyone when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool, along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Landon Coons inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Taking a look back 60 years ago at the 1966 Indianapolis 500-mile race, the 50th running of the 500. When we last left you, Lloyd Ruby had dropped out. So, too, a rookie from Formula One, Jackie Stewart, had dropped out with just 10 laps remaining. And the lead was then inherited by another Formula One great, world champion Graham Hill, also a rookie at Indianapolis. Now, there were those that were watching that thought, wait a minute, he hadn't passed a car all day, which led to some question as to whether or not he was truly the leader. His team absolutely thought he was, even as the checkered flag was about to fall.
Graham Hill getting set to come into victory lane. Granatelli is protesting. He says Clark is leading Stewart. Clark's pit time. Come back in here, Ray. And what's this you're giving me through the window?
I didn't expect to be back. Yes. But we just had a report that Granatelli is going to protest the race. And, of course, we'll have our official reports ground out all night long to confirm who we think the real winner is.
What's the question based on?
Granatelli claims that Clark is in the lead and has claimed this for about the last 10 laps, but they just now came up to the timing and scoring floor and asked us not to give out any checkered flags. But, of course, we go according to the record.
All right, Ray. Well, that'll make this again. We said it's the wildest day ever, and that will certainly add to it if there's a protest in the winter. But Pat Vidan has the white flag out, and we'll go by what's going on down here as it happens. The white flag is out now for number 24. We'll watch for it and follow him around for the final lap and then into victory lane for the ceremony. The officials who decide this race are down on the floor. The tapes will make it official by tomorrow morning are one floor beneath us. The white flag is out. The card is being held. And there's the white flag for Graham Hill in the American Red Ball Special. Pick him up on turn number one, Mike Ahearn.
And here he is in turn number one, Graham Hill coming around like he's been traveling this turn all afternoon, like he was on tracks, smoothly into the short chute, turn number two and Howdy Bell.
And we picked him up now. We sight Graham Hill, former world driving champion. There he goes through turn two as he heads up the backstretch with apparently just one lap to go, Doug Zink.
All right, thank you, Howdy. And here he comes past the halfway point on the backstretch, running all alone. Three here, and Ron Carroll.
And I pick him up, Doug. Here he comes into turn number three. He passes me right now. Now out of number three, into the short chute, and he'll be coming over to you, Jim Shelton.
Ronnie's right here. Handsome man with a beautiful car, Graham Hill in 24. Number 24, white, red trim with oil smudges and dollar signs. And here's Sid Collins.
Here he comes down the main stretch, and there's the checkered flag for Graham Hill, winner of the Golden Anniversary Indianapolis 500-mile race. Car number 24, the American Red Ball Special. Now we'll check for the checkered flag for the other finishers, and Len and John, you can keep a close tab on there for me, and we'll pick up Lou Palmer in victory lane to interview Graham and the crew as they come in. Graham Hill from London, England. There goes Jerry Grant. He's still out there fighting today in number 88, running in last place of those remaining, that is. Once the race got underway, we really didn't have... There's the checkered flag now for our second place finisher, Jimmy Clark. However, as Ray Paschke told us, Andy Granatelli in the STP company is protesting this finish. And our third place finisher...
Jim McElreath.
Was number three, Jim McElreath, and there's the crew running down.
Granatelli would never officially protest the race, but as for Graham Hill, he was indeed a bit bewildered, kind of puzzled that he had won the race, and I think you can hear that if you listen to it in a chaotic winner's interview with Lou Palmer.
And Graham, I think they'd like you to have a bus one more time with Sue Helen Harrison, our 500 Festival Queen.
All right, Johnny.
You see who's pulling behind you?
There we are. There we are. Gentlemen, there we are.
Hey!
Graham, we congratulate you thoroughly. In London, they're able to hear you right now at this moment. What have you to say? You know, rookies don't win here.
I'm rather surprised to have won, but naturally I'm very pleased to have done so.
Not a surprise. An excellent run and a fine follow-up to that third at Monaco. Can we expect you back here at the 500?
Yes, I expect so if I get invited.
You know who was running number two when we finished this run today?
No, I have no idea.
Jimmy Clark, I believe, running second to you.
Well, I'm very impressed, and the car ran beautifully. I had a very steady run and pretty uneventful, except for the mishaps earlier on.
This hustle-bustle on the first lap, how deeply involved in that were you?
Well, I didn't get involved, but I seemed to be in the middle of it. I was busy trying to avoid the cars and the wheels and the half shafts and various other bits that were flying around. I thought I was being bombed, in fact.
So you were truly in the center of this 10-car spiral up here?
Well, it would appear so. I was very fortunate.
Graham, what are your plans now? Back to the Grand Prix circuit?
I've got to go back to test the BRM fairly shortly.
Very good. And the Meekham Racing team.
Thank you, Dan. Hard luck.
Dan Gurney congratulating him, and again, Sue Helen Harrison, the queen. Here's Jackie Stewart. Jackie, a phenomenal run today. What was it that happened to you at the very end?
Well, the engine broke in the biggest possible way. Pretty big bang.
Did you have any indication trouble was coming on?
Yes, for about 10 laps.
Well, congratulations on a magnificent run in any event. And here's Graham. I'm sure you want to say a few words to him.
I've said hello.
Jackie over here. Graham Hill, Jackie Stewart has arrived to tender his congratulations. We noticed Colin Chapman and the Team Lotus group down here also congratulating them. Here is Jimmy Clark. Jimmy, congratulations on your number two position. That was a very good run, Jim. Congratulations on the number two.
Adding to the oddity list for the 1966 Indy 500, Graham Hill's name doesn't even appear in the program for the entry list. Donald Davidson explains why.
There's trivia about Graham Hill winning the 1966 500 because if you look through the program and look at the entry list, his name does not appear. And what happened was the car that he drove was assigned to Walt Hanskin, American sports car driver. And I don't know how many times this happened, but there was a spring testing session at Le Mans. The race is in mid-June, but they had gone over in April and Hanskin was fatally injured. And so no replacement was named at the time that the entries closed, and so when the program went to press, they had taken Walt Hanskin's name out, and there's just a blank. And so the Graham Hill assignment, I think, was made about May 1st. I think there was only like maybe less than 3 weeks before the race when he got assigned.
Of course, this would also be in 1966 with all of that. One of the other aspects of it from a trivia standpoint, it would be the end of the line in terms of the career of the great Roger Ward.
Yeah, that's correct, Jake. Roger Ward retired during the race, basically. He just said he had enough. And in fact, tomorrow night when we play our victory banquet special from the 1966 race, you'll hear a pretty emotional soundbite from Roger Ward talking about how he just he had enough. He wasn't having fun anymore. And that was it.
You know, the banquets themselves and the audio, and we have played that in the past, and folks, you're definitely going to want to hear that tomorrow night. Let's go back again, Mike, to recapping that, just the fact that Richie Murray had come up with the audio for you of the different banquets, and that is another thing that when you listen to the audio of it and you hear the voices of the drivers and the stars and the legends of the Speedway, it brings it all back. It's almost Great Gatsby-esque when you hear it to just feel like you're in the elements of those celebrations.
Yeah, it's amazing because you hear not only the biggest stars of the day, the Jim Clarks and those folks like that, but you hear some of the people that were there only one time. And so we're going to actually have that tomorrow night. Gary Congdon will have some interesting things to say about a guy, Gary Congdon, who was only in the race one time. So it's very special. And again, the Roger Ward interview is very special indeed because he retires and that's it on the spot.
Gary Congdon, again, one of the rookies in that stout rookie class of 1966, joining Larry Dixon, who was a rookie in that class, as well as Carl Williams. And then you get up towards the top. Mel Kenyon, legendary driver around the short tracks around Indiana and throughout the Midwest of that era, finishing in the fifth spot. Graham Hill was the winner as a rookie. And again, in adding to the list of oddities about the 1966 Indianapolis 500-mile race, it was Jackie Stewart who would be leading, as he, you heard him say there, when the engine went away and broke in a big way. He finished in sixth and was named Rookie of the Year, which doesn't seem unusual until you consider that a rookie was the one also that won the race but did not win Rookie of the Year. Yet another oddity, fittingly so, for 1966. Tomorrow night, it will not be oddity, but rather emotion that you will hear. Mike mentioned it, and you'll want to hear it tomorrow night. Roger Ward with an emotional speech that ended abruptly in 1966 at the banquet. We thank you for listening tonight to Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Now with McDonald's, wake up to a $4 breakfast meal deal. Wake up to a sausage McMuffin or sausage biscuit to hash browns, and wake up to a hot coffee. Get your $4 breakfast meal deal.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.